It's hard to get your loved ones to change their habits, let alone change world history. But that's exactly what happened with apartheid.
A demonstrator has run right through the play.
Australians and millions of others took a stand and helped to bring the racist South African regime to its knees. I'm Sesonke Msimang, and join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. ABC Rewind, Boycott. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I want the love story. I want what you see in the romantic movies.
I feel like I'm single just because I'm disabled. And, you know, I know you probably shouldn't say that, but that's what it felt like.
You know, we had such a great conversation and we'd have these really good dates and you wouldn't hear from them again.
When I was a kid, the phrase chick flick was used to describe popular movies designed for us, where inexplicably cute girl meets inexplicably cute boy. They fall in love, argue, split up, then fall back in love, ending with the camera pulling out as they kiss in the rain. It's goodbye movie, hello heteronormative, happily ever after. And there was something about that indoctrination that made us all feel like our turn was coming. But what if Sally didn't meet Harry? Or Shane doesn't meet Ilya? What if you want a partner, but it just inexplicably doesn't happen? If you want it, not finding love can be lonely, confusing, and make you feel like something is deeply wrong with you. This episode isn't about slaying at being solo. We already made an episode called Being Single and Owning It, where we gave the middle finger to the pressure on women to get hitched. It's really good, and you can find it in our podcast feed. This episode is about women who've never been in a serious relationship and who desperately want to be. It's about women who haven't found that partner to share a holiday, a house key, or a simple I love you. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about never having a partner.
I've caught a mini bouquet.
Ladies, meet Anna Nicole. She's 40, a writer from Perth, and a veteran bridesmaid. Anna Nicole has often been the centre of attention when it's time for the bride on her wedding day to throw her flowers.
Being tall, you know, you do get an advantage, but I always cringe, always like get pulled up to do it.
Oh, do
and
you?
And I just go with it. But,
sure.
You know, I don't really want to do it now. Didn't care so much when I was in my 20s because I was like, oh, well. I still was more optimistic about it happening.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm not so much and you probably wouldn't get me up there now at a wedding. I'll go hide in the toilets while they do that.
Oh, is that because you don't welcome the scrutiny or is it?
Oh, I don't want the spotlight on me for that. Interested.
It's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you get sort of the comments and everything.
Anna Nicole's from a big Italian family where heaps of her cousins were getting married in their 20s. She didn't date in high school. She had her first kiss later than the other kids. And as an adult, she's had crushes, been on dates, but never had someone to call her boyfriend, main squeeze, her partner, or my own personal favourite, her fella. She used to be regularly peppered with the question, "So, have you met anyone yet?" But now, not so much.
I think people have given up.
They know not to poke the bear.
Yeah. Not that I want to be asked that, but they don't ask just how I'm going with it, like
sure.
In a more sensitive, empathetic way. Like you can still ask people like to just care about where they're at in life, but you don't get that at all.
Oh, that's not fair.
Yeah. Because I don't think they know how to approach it because they know you haven't had a long-term relationship, so I think people are scared.
Yeah.
So they just avoid the topic.
There are certain times of the year where it's worse, and Anna Nicole really feels the weary wound of being what she calls a relationship virgin.
Christmas is hard because you see couples with the matching PJs. I know it's all cringe, But you just kind of think, oh, I've never had that. I have never had someone that I sort of wake up next to on Christmas Day.
In your matching pyjamas.
Yeah.
What do you think gets you about the pyjamas?
I don't know, that someone would have had to go to the shops to buy them. And I just think it's just a cute thing. And even if someone probably hates the idea of doing it, they do it because their partner wants to do it. And I think that's cute and special.
Did you ever meet the kind of person that you'd like to end up with?
Yes. I was probably 19. We sort of met through friends. He sort of had the charismatic traits that I like. He was creative. I'm a creative as well. Mm-hmm. He was a musician. But don't know, there was just an energy or a spark. You know, you're 19, we're going out to clubs or we're just hanging out at each other's houses. We would spend time together, just the two of us. And I just had never experienced that at that age. Obviously, it was like a first love, I guess.
Anna Nicole says she put this guy on a pedestal and they were spending so much time together that she thought it was time to let him know how she felt.
But then he just sort of cut me off and I just got a text message and I sort of froze because he said he didn't feel the same way. And I still remember that crushing feeling of, oh, okay, I thought you did.
I mean, that feeling of being crushed.
Yeah.
It's so personal too. Like it really feels like an indictment on your whole personality, your soul, how you look, everything. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, your self-esteem gets crushed, I guess. And then you sort of take that into any future interactions where you think, oh, gosh, is that going to happen again? And it did. It happened over and over where I would like certain men and they would let me down each time and I don't know why.
Anna Nicole had always wanted the big romantic love story. She wanted to date someone she felt connected to, and when it came to sex, she wanted it to be special with someone she knew. And that meant she had sex later than the people around her.
I was 30,
and
I held a lot of shame around that for a long time, and I think that's what was making my dating experiences hard, because the older I got, I felt really inadequate. You know, my friends are already married, some are having kids, and I haven't had sex.
Anna Nicole changed her expectations of what her first time would look like and ripped off the band-aid with a longtime friend.
It was a bit anticlimactic, but there was a huge weight off my shoulders that I could now sort of say that I had.
With the sex thing out of the way, Anna Nicole put her energy into finding her true love. But it wasn't just about meeting up with dudes on dates. She was also using woo-woo in the hope of getting wooed.
The guy that I really would be attracted to would get put on my vision board. I would go to see clairvoyants who would all tell me that I was going to meet someone.
Would they?
I don't know if I believed them half the time, but you do. You're like, oh, well, if they say that I am, then I will. But, yeah, I've done some where they're sort of just in a crystal shop in a shopping centre. I did one where I went to Byron Bay and she lived in like a sea container in the middle of the bush.
What do you think drew you to that?
Sometimes it's just a validation that you're on the right track. Or they might say something that's like, okay, that validates something that I'm feeling. So then you hold on to these little things.
Little crumbs,
yep.
Our forever bridesmaid spent a lot of her 30s in the grind of dating apps, and it made her feel like shit. She'd meet up with people and there'd be zero vibes, or she'd like them, but they weren't interested in anything serious.
When I was about 35, I completely switched them off and I haven't been back on since.
If I don't put a full-length photo of myself in my wheelchair, I get matches.
Meet Peter. Peter's 35. She was born with cerebral palsy and has a podcast about what it's like to live with disability called I Can't Stand. Peter has never been in a relationship, and in her quest to find a partner, she's invested a lot of time into dating apps. And look, everyone who's been on the apps knows that it's feral out there, but the men who've messaged her have had a unique flavour of trash.
Photos that I put on my profile directly relate to the result that I get. So I have always genuinely put up photos of myself in my wheelchair, and I either get no matches for weeks and weeks and weeks, or I get really icky messages.
Dare I ask what kind of messages are icky?
Weird things like, if we had sex on the floor, would you be stuck there and what would you do? Oh. And, you know, it's a power play that makes me feel really uncomfortable.
Wow. That is seriously wow, wow, gross. And I mean gross. But at least these men are waving their own red flags. Jesus Christ. Thankfully, Peter has more than just toxic dating apps to keep her occupied, interested and interesting.
I use an electric wheelchair. I have an adapted car that I can drive. I actually have a speedboat license.
What?
Yes. I'm a bit of a speed demon. And, like, I have an adapted house that allows me to live completely independently.
Peter's life is filled with friends and overseas travel, but she always hoped she'd find someone to share it with. When Peter was a teenager at school, her classmates started to date.
I would watch other people sort of flirt. And to be really frank, I flirted as well. Mm. I'm a real flirt. I love men and I enjoy talking to men. But yeah, it was sort of like, oh, this is going to take longer for me than everybody else.
So you're a good flirt?
I think so.
Yeah, I think if you say I'm a bit of a flirt, then you probably are quite good at it.
Look, I'm more than happy to put my skills on you, Yumi, and you can give me some feedback.
Oh, there she goes right now. So let's see. Confident, skilled at flirting, speedboat license, tick, tick, tick. See, the thing that Peter, Anna Nicole, and the next person we're going to meet have in common is that they're all awesome, attractive, interesting, and smart.
I constantly fell in love with the lovely gay guy at high school.
Yep.
And they weren't out at the time. But yeah, they have such a beautiful, lovely energy in general. Like, I was attracted to that sort of soft, genuine person.
Mm, who can talk about their emotions.
I guess so. And they're more in tune and would ask really insightful questions.
Peter's gaydar might be hopeless, but she credits her disability with helping her have a very finely tuned bullshit detector.
I watch my non-disabled friends and I'm like, guys, can you not read that this person's not our person?
Peter is at the ready to call out time wasters, and she trusts her instincts when she meets people who are creepy or fake.
You can just tell when people are being genuine, particularly around me. I can really read people's body language quite well.
In 2023, Peter was on holiday in Spain. Between exploring ancient monuments and eating from tiny plates at tapas bars, she met someone.
He runs an accessible travel agency over there.
Yeah.
He was just so lovely and warm and kind and, you know, pulled the chair out to sit at the table without me having to ask. His level of understanding of what it was like to live with a disability was just the cherry on top.
This dream guy in Spain who understood Peter's needs and desires without being asked was taken. Peter came back to Australia understanding that she would love to end up with someone like him one day.
And it was very hard saying goodbye to him, that was for sure.
Do you think there's any judgment or shame about never having had a serious relationship?
Yes, but I also think that's what people expect for disabled people.
Sure. So it's a bit of both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any moments where you're like, fucking damn, where is my husband?
I sing that song all the time. Where the hell is my husband? Because God, his timekeeping is fairly poor.
It's a song by Ray, and she can't get the zip down by herself.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss that when I can't open a jar. I'm like, ah. Oh. This is the time I need somebody to open the jar.
Be friendly with your neighbours. That's what I do.
Peter has nailed building a village and fostering a community.
It's probably the thing I'm most proud of is my circle of friends. I think when you're an only child, you're very aware that if you're not active in your friendships, you're going to be very lonely.
Mm.
So I have a wide, wide circle of friends. I have lots of male friends too.
Yeah. Do you think you get intimacy from your friendships?
I do, probably not as much as what I used to when we were out drinking and doing those, you know, late night DM mm-hmm. in the corner of the club or whatever, but friendships are so important to my mental health.
The saying of being left on the shelf is certainly true because you certainly feel that and, you know, the loneliness can be really overwhelming.
This is Fiona. She's tried the apps, gone to speed dating events and occasionally had flings that have lasted up to 3 months, but never a serious relationship. Fiona's now 45 and she's at the point in her life where being left on the shelf just feels supremely lonely.
And suddenly you're the only one on your couch on a Saturday night and you've got no one to go out with. No one's replying to your text messages because they're all partnered up. You naturally think something's wrong with you.
With her entire cohort busy with obligations to kids and partners, Fiona has grown used to planning for weekends alone. But she does feel the judgment from the outside world.
I went to this cafe, just wanted to take myself out for brunch one day and I was like, oh, I'd like to sit, you know, on the river or something. And they were like, oh, no, we're going to sit you inside. And I'm like, well, no, that's not the experience that I want. Mm. And I literally had sort of a fight with him. And I'm like, you know, you're making me feel, you know, like you've got more important people. And if people are with a group, then they're, you know, more important than me on my own kind of thing.
Fiona grew up expecting she'd have a table for two, slurping the same strand of spaghetti with her special little hound dog until their lips met.
I was the rom-com queen, you know, boy meets girl and they fall in love and we'd walk out of the cinema happy as can be and just fulfilled.
Fiona's parents were happily married and she assumed that just like them, one day she would find someone.
I think in my 20s, all I wanted to do was have fun and I was just out and about with my girlfriends and I put a lot of emphasis on my friendships and I probably didn't really stop to think about, hold on, I really want a partner too. And then obviously as you get older, you start to think about this is something that I really want and why isn't this happening for me?
Fiona's been on 180 dates without ending up in a serious relationship. Yes, 180. She's counted. She even applied for the reality TV show Married at First Sight, which, for those of you on a more highbrow cultural diet, is a show where people get fake married to drama-seeking randoms and chaos ensues. Fiona was shortlisted and eventually sat for an in-person audition in a room with 10 of the show's producers.
And they just sat me in front of them and they just grilled me to tears, basically, about, you know, why hadn't I found anyone and what was wrong with me and what's wrong? Why are you still single? I think I had 3 interviews and all I did was just cry.
So, yeah, our girl did not fake marry a stranger on a TV show. But she does find that her dating life is mined for entertainment as the only single one at the barbecue.
You don't want to go to these parties or these dinners where you're the only single person. You know, they're like, oh, well, what, any been on any dates? And you're like, no, because it's hell out there, you know? And so you feel like you've kind of got nothing to contribute. And
yeah,
then they start
sure.
talking about their children and you know, their partners. And you're like, yeah, okay, well, I don't really have anything to contribute to the conversation. So that's been really hard.
Yeah. Can I ask you about, you know, this being the perpetually single person? What are some of the assumptions that you come across from friends and family and society in general?
They do assume that, oh, well, you're choosing to be single. No, actually, it's not a choice, you know, it just hasn't happened.
The mystery of why she is still single orbits Fiona's brain the same way a guy who can't cook circles the buffet he didn't contribute to.
I've seen partners of, you know, 10 years, then they'd break up and boom, they'd be in another relationship. And you'd kind of be like, well, I don't understand. Like, what's wrong with me? You know, how come that person can meet someone at the pub or, you know, on a Saturday night? I go to the pub most Saturday nights, you know.
Sure.
So you feel, you know, like there is something wrong with you.
Fiona has met plenty of men on dates that she likes. She's gone home with some of them, but they've never become her boyfriend. One time, after 3 months of seeing the same guy, Fiona broached the, so what are we doing here, conversation. But it backfired terribly.
You're like, which way are we going? We're at a fork in the road. Are we, you know, going to give this a go?
And then he just opened the door and said, get out. I don't want to have this conversation with you.
I think it was the first time I took a bag to his place, you know, because I don't want to talk about feelings until, you know, I want to know where we're going, you know?
Yeah.
And then he certainly didn't want to talk about
he
feelings.
He opened the door for you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it sounds to me like it's like going into a boxing ring and you have to be ready to get punched a few times.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There have been lots of emotional moments with, you know, men and rejection, and I don't understand why. You know, we had such great conversation and we'd have these really good dates and you wouldn't hear from them again. You're like, I just can't understand. We met at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I didn't get home until midnight and now you don't want to see me ever again? It's a jungle out there, you know, and I think the most emotional part of it is probably seeing that everyone else is meeting these life moments and your path is different.
For Anna Nicole, our tall wedding bouquet dodger, her desire to have kids shaped what she was looking for in a partner.
It's the whole picture that I was chasing all those years, where it wasn't just a husband or a partner. They would then have been the father of my children. But now that I can see that I'm not going to be a mother, I think that changes the picture for me.
Anna Nicole has done a lot of soul searching over the years. She's a big fan of Dr. Bella DiPaolo, who features in our Being Single and Owning It episode. Dr. Bella wrote a book called Single at Heart. It's a term she uses for those who live their most meaningful, fulfilling lives as single people.
When I read that, it was like something inside me just lit up. And I thought, you know what? I've been chasing something that's not actually me for so long.
Wow.
And I am actually a person who is single at heart. I deep down have always loved my own company. I sometimes can't even picture someone sharing my space. I love my house so much because I've created it for me.
Mm.
It'll be very challenging for me to what it would feel like to have someone there. But I'm not writing it off.
She's not writing it off, although for Anna Nicole, the right partner now would be an addition to her life rather than the centre of it.
I still want that freedom that I've developed for myself, you know, to have someone we can just go to the movies on the weekend or go see shows, theatres, you know, I love all that.
Mm-hmm.
To have someone to share that with and do things that we both love, or just to sit on a Sunday and read a book together, that would be the picture-perfect moment for me. There's just silence in the room. I just actually relish a lot of what I've created for myself.
Our intrepid traveller Peter still feels she's missing something in her life. This feeling hit home at one of her best friend's weddings.
Listening to my friend who was the groom speak about how much he loved his now wife really just made me realise what love could actually be when you meet the right person.
Wow. And what emotions did that bring up for you?
I really work hard to make sure that it's not jealousy, that I'm happy for them, because I genuinely am really, really happy. But it's like, oh, I wish I find that for me. I thought I would get married and have kids, but in reality, I think we're all at our own time schedules.
A few years ago, after her dad had a stroke, Peter began to think more deeply about having a family.
I realised that once my parents die, that would be it. And it really shocked me to be like, oh, okay, I need to sort of sort myself out.
At 35, Peter decided to freeze her eggs.
It wasn't easy. I came up against extreme medical ableism. It was one of the hardest things I've ever gone through. But I did it twice and I ended up with 22 eggs in the freezer.
Did having the eggs in the freezer change your outlook on dating?
It did, because I don't feel the pressure now to find someone according to my own time schedule.
After decades of dating and swiping and maths auditions, Fiona has also found peace with her situation.
I don't think many people have gone through you know, the 10, 15 years of therapy that I've gone through, the hard questions that you ask yourself, and you get to that place of fully acceptance of who you are and love for yourself. I don't think many people get there, because it's really, once you get there, oh, it's liberating, isn't it?
It's so good.
It's amazing.
You sound like you are in a really good place.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I love that table for one. I'm there all the time.
I know. I mean, just going to a bar and just people watching and having a glass of wine and a little cheese and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's lovely.
It's fucking brilliant, actually. When I'm there by myself, I often think people must be so jealous of me.
Yeah, I love that.
Ladies, I have to confess that reading a book in silence does sound like bliss to me. In my perfect world, the table for one is a fucking throne. So what's the lesson here? I guess it is that we don't always have to be badass bitches showing a brave face. It's okay to be vulnerable, to want romantic love, and it's okay to very keenly feel the pain of not experiencing it. Whether we're partnered or not, satisfied or not, restless with the need for another person to twin in pajamas, finding meaning and purpose on your own is worth it. Loving on your friends, being bold about what you want in life, and investing in your own pleasures and speedboat licenses is important. And look, not to gloat, right? But men die earlier than women. So the straight ladies among us are going to eventually have to learn about surviving on their own, okay? If you can find the joy in the table for one, I think you're likely to thrive whether or not someone special pulls up a chair. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gundungurra, Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt, produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and our executive producer is Alex Lolbach. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.